Hi, this is Tiana Bartoletta, and you're listening to the Run to the Top podcast.
Hello, my running friend. Most likely you are on the run right now, and I hope it's going really well. I'm super excited about today's guest, but I have to admit that we've been a little one-sided when it comes to running on the Run to the Top podcast. I'll explain what I mean in just a sec, but first, let me introduce myself if you're new to the show. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik, also known as The Planted Runner. I blog and coach at theplantedrunner.com, and this show is produced each and every week by the team behind runnersconnect.net, the best place on the entire internet to learn anything and everything about running. So what did I mean about us being a little one-sided? If I had to guess, I would say most of you, and I'm including myself here, lean towards the endurance side of running. We like to run long and far and see where that journey takes us. But there's a completely different side of the sport of running that we endurance junkies tend to ignore. And I think that's a mistake. And I'm talking about sprinting. Sprinting can be defined as any distance short enough to reach your top speed completely anaerobically or without needing oxygen for fuel. For most of us, that's less than 20 seconds. Once you run all out longer than that, your lungs scream for oxygen, and you will probably not be able to sustain that effort. So why should long-distance runners care about those 20 seconds? Because by tapping into your anaerobic system just a couple times a week, you teach yourself to burn that fire just a little hotter. Working on that top gear makes every other gear run just a little more smoothly and efficiently. But don't take my word for it. I invited one of the best sprinters in the world to teach you more. Tiana Bartoletta is a 35-year-old American sprinter and long jumper. She is a two-time Olympian with three gold medals. She ran the lead leg in the world record-setting 4x100-meter relay team in 2012, handing the baton to Allison Felix. At the 2016 Summer Olympics, she won two more golds, first with a personal best to win the long jump, and then again leading off the winning 4x100-meter relay team. In non-Olympic years, Tiana has won the world championships three times and competed as a pusher on the U.S. bobsled team in 2012. And if all of that weren't amazing enough, she's also a registered yoga teacher, writes a blog at tianab.com, and her memoir, Survive in Advance, will be released this June. I asked Tiana what sprinters, long jumpers, and yogis can teach us endurance monsters, and I think her answers might just surprise you. Tiana is a delightful person inside and out, and I can't wait for you to meet her. Before we get into our conversation, if you are recovering from an injury and want to make sure you're maximizing your nutrition to help get you healthy, you'll want to check out Heal from Amino Company. Later in the episode, I'll tell you more about Heal and how it can help with your injuries and overall recovery, or you can check out the research yourself at aminoco.com/RTTT. Also, as the return of real races seems to be increasing in probability each week, at Runners Connect, we are excited to announce our next round of six-week training boot camps. They open May 3rd, and they're designed to help you target your weaknesses in training before the race-specific training begins. I'll tell you more about the groups later on in the episode, but in the meantime, you can check them out at runnersconnect.net/focus. And now, here's Tiana Bartoletta. Welcome to the Run to the Top, Tiana.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Me too. Well, this conversation is a little bit delayed because you got a surprise drug test at 7 in the morning. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, actually 7 is pretty good because I have to declare a window and they usually come at 5. So
oh my goodness.
Them coming at 7 was like a little bit late for them. But yeah, they can come whenever they want to. And that's just, you know, part of being able to have the privilege of competing at this level. You have to make yourself available for these tests whenever, wherever.
Well, it's probably because they saw your Instagram, because you're getting absolutely shredded and they want to make sure nothing funny is going on. Can you talk about the 60-day transformation that you posted? Like, what happened? I thought you looked great before, by the way, but now it's just like you're like a sculpture. It's amazing. Can you tell me like how that happened?
Yeah. So I also agree that I looked great before. It was so the transformation, the reason I had to do it is because my performances weren't great. It wasn't that I wasn't great. It was just I needed better performances. So to make it make sense, we have to go back to February. I ran in an indoor meet in Arkansas and I thought things were going well. I thought I was, you know, on the right track. And then I ran a time in the 60 meter dash that I didn't even run in high school. Wow. And I was like, oh my God, what does this mean? And I did the natural thing. Does this mean I'm too old now? Does this mean I need to retire? Like what does this performance mean? And one of my mental conditioning coaches, because I got a lot of people who like try to keep my head on straight, he said, well, what does it mean to you? What did you learn? And I said, well, I learned that I was too heavy. Like, I just am carrying too much mass for what I'm trying to do. But does this mean I need to retire? Does this, like, what's happening? And he said, no, it means you need to lose weight. And, like, and then after right. you lose weight, then you can ask the retirement question. But until you get the body prepared for what you're trying to do, none of this means anything. Like, you have to do the first things first. And so I clearly was struggling to do it on my own. It's like I know all in my head how I'm supposed to eat and what I should drink and how much water and all the yada, 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 you know. But I wasn't having that breakthrough. I was not figuring it out. So I reached out to the female bodybuilder who was a follower of mine. Like we
That's
hadn't
so
really,
funny.
Yeah, we hadn't had a conversation, but I followed her back. I was looking at her page and I was like, I really like how she's approaching transforming her body. It wasn't about like, I need to be skinny. I need to starve myself. She really came from a place of like, this is about discipline. This is about setting your personal goals and sticking to it and working hard, small incremental changes for a sustainable, you know, plan. And I was like, okay, this is my teacher. Like,
yes,
this is the one. And so together we created this plan. And day one, she was like, no sugar, no alcohol. No, I was like, all things I knew, but needed right. the accountability to stick to. And so just 60 days later, I'm down 11 pounds and I've been hungry at times. I've had cravings for, you know, crunching on potato chips, which is one of my spices.
Mine too.
I have a sweet tooth. Like I love, you know, baked goods and stuff, but I don't, I have never indulged in them during the season anyway. So that wasn't something that I had to really fight off. But just, you realize how much of our eating is just habit.
Yeah, and
mindless snacking. And so that's really the biggest transformation is that everything is a mindful. Everything I ingest is done with that little pause, like, why am I eating this? What is it for? And that's mm-hmm. been the difference. And my body has really responded to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember reading in one of the threads that you said you were hungry, just like you said. And that's not something that we really like to admit, you know, it's like, why did you want to tell people like, hey, yes, this is working, but to be perfectly honest, I'm hungry, you know, like, why do you want to share that part about it?
Because I don't believe in setting people up for failure. Because one thing that a lot of athletes do poorly, especially on the sprint and like field event side, is we tend to make hard things look easy. That's why we're elite.
Right. Yes.
but we also, in a lot of ways, are like, rah, rah, you can do it too, right? So we're doing both things. We make something very difficult look really easy. And then we turn around and tell other people, like, yeah, you can get out here and do it too. But we don't do a good job of the middle part where it's like, by the way, this is going to hurt. This is going to suck.
Right.
And this is what you need to expect. And I just wanted to be honest about that. It's like, because I know that there are people following me who aren't happy with their bodies as they are. And mm-hmm. I don't agree that you should change your body because you're unhappy with it. I think you need to change because you love your body and you want to see better for it, but do not mm-hmm. try to change your body because you hate it or you're unhappy with it, right? And so that was step one, is to be honest about why I was changing my body in the first place. Mm-hmm. And that's why I appreciated you saying that I looked good before. It's like, I agree. I did.
Yeah.
But then the second part is like, if we're going to take this route, if we're going to go down this path of doing this, I need you to know, if you need to detox from sugar, you're going to be a bitch for 3 days. like it's going to suck.
Yeah.
You're going to be hangry and moody. You might pick a fight with somebody and not know where it came from. Like, you're good. That sugar withdrawals. And because you know, maybe you're more likely to stick to it. But if nobody told you that that was a reaction you could have, you might just throw it all away. Like, this isn't working for me. Like, clearly something's wrong. Nope, nothing's wrong. That's just, that's the way it works, you know? And I wanted people to know, like, you're going to be hungry. I was hungry at night for like the first, 2 weeks. I would be like, I really just need a snack, like just something. It's like, no, you can't do that. And then it goes away. But I just wanted people to know that, so they know what they can fight through and that there's something on the other side.
I love it. I love the honesty. And I love that you show that it really is hard work. You know, are you in your garage, you know, lifting? Like, I don't know where you are, but you are just like lifting these huge weights and you're just doing your little dances. And it is clearly not for somebody who's like, I want to look good in a bikini. You are working. And I love how honest you are about the whole process.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, so I'm going to ask you some questions, and you're going to have to forgive me if they sound super basic, but our listeners mostly are endurance runners. So mm-hmm. when somebody says, I'm going to go run 100, they're usually talking about 100 miles, right? Not 100 meters. And you are a 100 meter specialist among many of your talents. So I would love to learn a little bit more about that. What makes a good 100 meter specialist?
Yes. So a good 100 meter specialist is allergic to long distances. Like, there is a visceral, just no, aversion to anything long, right? We are explosive. We can basically go from 0 to 60 miles per hour in as little time as possible. There's very little like buildup required. But after we get there, we can hold it for like 4 seconds and then we're done. Like, that's yes. it. Game over, race over. And then everything hurts because we use all of our energy so quickly. So right. I would imagine it's, if you wanted a visual, it's like a space shuttle taking off. It's like that initial fire explosion, then we're done. So it's like, that's what it's like. It's like a rocket.
So when you say you're allergic to running long, like you obviously don't just run 100 meters in training and then stop. You do obviously run long. So what's a long run for you? 200 meters? No.
Yeah, you know, a long run for me is 250 or longer but that's because it's fast. Like, right. So that hurts. So 300s, once we get to 300s and 450s, which we have to do, like in fall training, the intensity, the speed drops. And so it's like a little bit different. I have to do mm-hmm. mile runs in the fall, and that's like brutal. That's like, it's right. the worst thing. My stomach hurts. And then I see, you know, my friend Stephanie Bruce talk about like how her last mile of her 26 mile workout was 5:35, and I'm like, I run 1 mile for time and it's like 9:40, and I'm like struggling and angry and upset the entire time.
We all know that one of the most difficult parts of running is staying injury-free and bouncing back from those injuries as quickly as possible when they do happen. While most of us focus on the physical injury itself, stretching, strengthening, icing, and so on, an often neglected aspect of injury recovery and staying healthy is the nutrition component. For injuries to heal and for you to recover faster, you must provide the body with the nutrients it needs to accelerate muscle repair. And that's what the Amino Company's product Heal does better than almost anything on the market. Heal is designed to reduce recovery times and improve physical function after injuries by accelerating muscle repair while helping maintain a healthy inflammatory response. In fact, a recent clinical trial compared the use of Heal with high-quality whey protein. Heal showed a 3 times larger response to whole body protein synthesis and breakdown, which led to reduced muscle protein breakdown and an increased muscle protein synthesis compared to whey. In layman's terms, this means participants had less muscle breakdown and faster muscle repair when using Heal. If you're looking for a nutritional advantage when it comes to recovering from your running injury or your daily training, I recommend you give Heal a try. We've even got a special offer for you where you can save 30% by using the code RC30. Just head to aminoco.com/RTTT. That's aminoco.com/RTTT. And use the code RC30 at checkout to save 30%.
I have to do mile runs in the fall, and that's like brutal. That's like, it's right. The worst thing. My stomach hurts. And then I see, you know, my friend Stephanie Bruce talk about like how her last mile of her 26 mile workout was 5:35. And I'm like, I run 1 mile for time and it's like 9:40. And I'm like struggling and angry and upset the entire time.
You are kidding. You run a mile in 9:40. Is that what you just said? You're kidding. That's awesome to hear.
Yeah.
That makes me feel so good. Now let's talk about Stephanie Bruce. You know, one of the bright spots of 2020, obviously crazy year, is that you two connected. And I would love to hear about that story.
Yeah. So she basically just sent me a DM and was like, you want to be friends? It was really a lot like that. She was kind of like, I've been following you. Do you want to be friends? And strangely enough, I have a life coach who had been like really on me about my female friendships because it's a struggle for me. Just with the lifestyle of training all the time and like the yoga studios kind of closing down. That's kind of where I was getting my socialization from. He was like, you need to, you know, get out there. He was almost like dating. He was like, you need to get back out there, find your girlfriends kind of thing. And so when she sent me this message, I was like, hell yeah. Yes. Oh. I'm going to get one friend. And so then she set up a FaceTime call and we immediately, she was like, she pulled out this notebook of like dreams she had. And I was like, oh, here's my notebook of dreams. And it was like literally just back and forth, like dreaming big. And I think it only took like 1 or 2 calls before we were planning the Grit and Growth retreat. So it was like, we totally got each other and we're big dreamers. And it just felt really good to be supported by another female trying to do big things. And also, I was super pumped to have a friend that was like, did something I could not do, like could not even imagine being able to do. Like I would look at her and I would say like, but what are you thinking about that whole time? Like, explain it to me. Like, I don't understand. And so yes. It's been really nice to get that sneak peek behind the curtain of something that I think is absolutely impossible to do.
Yes. Yeah. Well, she is amazing. And it's really, I think it's really sweet that you guys connected like that, just random. So 2020, obviously Tokyo was delayed. Can you talk about what that was like for you when you found out the news?
So Tokyo 2020 being postponed for me was a gift because I actually was literally dying. I didn't know that I was dying, but I was. And so at the end of 2019, I just deteriorated quickly. I already knew that I had severe anemia, but what I didn't know was that I had a huge fibroid tumor in my uterus that was hemorrhaging. I thought period was just being weird, but I was just losing a lot of blood. By the end of 2019, I had, I think my doctor said, 2 to 3 less pints of blood than the average adult.
Oh my gosh.
And my iron levels were like non-existent. So I had emergency surgery in December, and we thought that my body would just heal because I was no longer hemorrhaging, but it didn't. And so then I had a blood transfusion in February. So in February of 2020, it's an Olympic year, and I'm still not feeling good, and I'm still not able to string 2 consecutive training days together. I was like, I don't think I'm going to make this team. As a reigning Olympic champion, my body can't do it. And so, like, I got the transfusion, and I started to feel better, and I went back to the track, but it was like I was starting from square one. And it, I'm looking at the calendar, and I'm like, well, we'll see what we can do in a couple months. But I don't have qualifying marks for the trials. I don't have the Olympic A standard. I really have to figure out how to get ready in such a short period of time. It feels impossible. And then just a few weeks later, we were locked down in the house, and the IOC was still saying the Olympics will go on. And so it's like, now we're in the house, and it's like, how do I get my body ready in the house?
Yeah.
So there was so much going on for me at the time. But when they finally announced the postponement, I received it as a gift of time to just get back to health.
Yeah. Well, you are definitely back to health now. So let's take a little bit of a trip back to 2012 and 2016, where you were a part of the 4x100 gold medal relay team. So your job is the lead leg. So you start on the curve and you hand the baton to Allison Felix. So talk us through that. Like, what makes a good relay team? How do they pick the order? And how many millions of times do you practice that baton pass?
So to make a relay team, you basically just have to have participated in one of the short sprints at the trials. And then your name gets put into a pot basically for the relay pool. Then all of those people get invites to a relay camp. Usually it's like overseas at piggybacks off of a Diamond League competition so that we can run together at the end. We don't know the order or how the coach decides. So what happens is at those camps, we do a million handoffs in a bunch of different combinations. And the relay coach kind of stands in the infield with his hand on his chin and kind of watches everybody and sees how they interact and how they pass. And then the day before the relay camp, like day before the meet that ends relay camp, they'll give an order and we'll have like a relay A team, a relay B team. And it's kind of like a tryout. We'll see how it happens. Mm-hmm. But after that, we don't practice anymore because we all have our own coaches. We all have our own meet schedules. We're never in the same place at the same time. And so it's not millions of handoffs. It's dozens. Really? It's maybe one dozen before a championship, which is often why it doesn't work out for us, or why it hadn't historically worked out for us at major events, because we don't get to actually practice that often.
Right. Well, you're doing better than the guys, though. You know? Yeah. Well, what was your favorite moment from either of those games? Is there something specific that stands out?
I loved not realizing that we broke the world record. Like, somebody had to point it out to us in 2012. I think maybe Carmelita knew because she was looking at the clock, but I didn't see. From my vantage point, I just knew we won, and we won by a lot. And so we began to celebrate. And then you could see the celebration escalate when we realized it was a world record. So we went from, yay, we won, to, greatest ever, you know, kind of like that. That was a really good moment. It's hard to choose between 2012 and 2016 because 2016 had just some huge challenges. And so victory is always sweeter when you have to break through a bunch of walls to get there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you are also a gold medalist in the long jump. And I want to talk about the world record there. So there is the American world record and the overall world record. Those are very, very old, from the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. So what's it going to take to break it?
I think back in the 80s and 90s, what a lot of the jumpers were really fast. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to take an incredible combination of speed plus technique. So like, in an honest assessment of myself, I have the speed, but I'm not a brilliant technician. I get away with a lot because I am just traveling so fast. All I need to do is not break at the board, like not decelerate into takeoff. And my speed carries me all the way into the pit. Now, if I can couple that with technique, maximizing the time that I'm in the air, which is really hard to do the faster you are, then that big jump is there. And I think that's what we're all looking for, is that sweet spot between velocity on the approach and technique in the air. And so whoever manages that the best can absolutely break that record. I know, because both Brittany and I have jumped that far on toe scratches. So it's there, and we can absolutely break it. It's just a matter of putting it together at the right time and being on the board.
As races return this fall, it's important to remember that you might need to tweak how you approach your training after a year away from racing. In particular, if your training wasn't as focused as it normally would be, then you need to start your plan a little earlier than your typical 16-week schedule. Use these extra 6 weeks or so to focus on your weaknesses, building your mileage and long runs, fine-tuning your speed, dropping those extra few pounds, or getting fully healthy and in a routine with strength and injury prevention work. The focused training during this extra 6 weeks will make a huge difference in how successful you are during the race-specific portion of your training plan. And that's why we are reopening our 6-week boot camps this week, to give you the exact plan, focus, and guidance you need to maximize your pre-fall race training period so you can hit that 16-week training plan firing on all cylinders. We've got boot camps to help you work on speed, weight loss, strength, mileage building, and your first race if you're a beginner. Each class comes with a completely custom training schedule focused on your goal, customized strength and injury prevention work, access to our expert Runners Connect coaches, in-depth course content related to your goal, and a small group, a team of runners working through the same challenges to help keep you accountable and make this focused training even more fun. Boot camps open this week and start May 3rd. To see our available focus groups and boot camps and get all the details, visit runnersconnect.net/focused. That's runnersconnect.net/focus. New classes starting May 3rd. You recently had a meet in the rain that you were jumping really, really well. And I would love to talk about how you registered for that meet.
Yeah, I registered myself as Team AARP. So the American Association of Retired Persons. Now, I'm not sponsored by them at all, but it was definitely a joke because people have been trying to retire me for a long time. Partially because of my age. I mean, we are in a sport where the sprinters and field events are considered old once they hit 30. And it, I don't believe it's the same is not the case for longer distances. Like, it's almost like you get better with age in the distance world. I don't hear that kind of like ageist kind of conversation like mm-hmm. we hear when it comes to the shorter events. And so ever since my 30th birthday, which was in 2015, people have been like, it's time, as if I have to voluntarily step out of the way to let younger people, you know, give my lane up for younger people, which I absolutely disagree is the case. So I knew and my team knew that we were working our way back, that things were going well. And so I basically was just trolling. I was trolling the track world. It's like, oh, I'm old. Okay, I'm going to be old then. I'm going to represent for the old people.
Well, so what's your key to longevity in this sport then? What makes you at your age still able to perform at such a high level?
You got to listen to your body. Like the body changes and you have to let it. And you have to adapt to what it's telling you. There's too many people that are like, well, you know, I used to train this way, and so I need to train this way still. No, there was a phase in my training this year where I could only train for 2 days and had to take 2 days off. 2 days on, 2 days off. 2 days on, 2 days off. And that's what I needed at that time. And you have to be able to put your ego aside and say, this is what my body needs. Sure, I can see that my rivals and competitors are doing 6 days a week, but I can't do that. And at the end of the day, you have to train the body that you have, that you actually have, not the one you wish you had. The one
yes. I love this. Yeah. Yes. I love this because, you know, in the endurance world, people do this all the time. And as we age, we try to train like we're still 25 or 30. And, you know, people are afraid to take rest days, that they're going to lose fitness if they, you know, don't run every single day. But we need more recovery time as we get older. I mean, that's how we build. And I love hearing it from your side of the sport that that's true too. So how do you get your ego out of the way? You know, because that's a thing, like your ego says, oh God, I'm insecure about my training, so I have to keep pushing. Like, how do you tell yourself, no, it's okay to step back?
Yeah. See, for me, this developed because of my yoga and meditation practice. So like there is no way that I would have gotten here in like this mindset just doing sport, because I don't think sport itself is set up for that. I mean, it's results based. It's all of these. It's like we crave instant gratification. It's all these things that on its surface aren't mentally healthy, and which I think is why you see so much mental illness in athletes, because just the way that the world of sport works, it's just not conducive to that kind of lifestyle. But because I am also a yogi and a meditator, I have learned how to just kind of observe those thoughts. And people need to understand that you can opt in or out of any of this type of thinking, right? And so I think one of the reasons I'm really proud of my last meet is because I walked to the starting line and it's like, yeah, sure, I want to win, I want to run fast. But my mindset was largely like, let's see what happens. I've done the work. I've been working hard. I've done everything right to prepare for this moment. And yoga teaches me through the book, the Bhagavad Gita, I'm not entitled to the fruits of my labor. I'm just obligated to do the labor. And so it's like, I don't actually need to know the result or am guaranteed the result, but I did the work. And so all I can do is offer that back. And so that mindset makes it easier for me to just keep showing up, to just separate those things.
Oh, that is so good. That is so good. I'm going to remember that for sure. But yeah, so let's talk more about yoga. So, you know, there's a stereotype with runners that we don't need to be flexible. You know, some of the best marathoners in the world famously can't touch their toes. And you are a yogi, and you are super flexible. So can you tell me how physically yoga helps you? And then we can get more into the mental side of it.
Yeah, so physically, I think I treat yoga a lot like injury prevention, because my body is able to move. And I think we confuse flexibility with mobility. Mobility is more important than flexibility. Like, you don't need to be able to put your leg over your head. I can't do that. But you need to be mobile for what you're trying to do, right? And so that's, mm-hmm. for me, yoga helps me with my range of motion, which as a jumper flying through the air is extremely important. I need to be able to keep that right. nice and lubricated and ready to go. So physically, yoga helps me do that without needing to do that work on the track, which means that my body is not being beat up so much, but I'm still getting the same work in. So mm-hmm. that's how yoga helps me with that. And it also improves and increases body awareness. So I have a breakfast club. We meet every morning and we do this almost the same 15 minute flow every morning before we meditate together for 5 minutes. But if you continue to do the same flow every single day, you'll start to know one day, oh, my right hamstring is feeling a little different than it usually is. Now I need to pay attention to that and maybe adjust my training or my warm up accordingly. And so because you're building this inventory of body awareness for how your body moves, you're probably not going to get hurt as much because now you know when something feels like, okay, I can push through this, or, oh, I need to stop. And so that's another thing that has really developed alongside my yoga practice that's helped me on the track.
Okay. So that's just through the repetition of the same moves over every mm-hmm. single day. Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. So you have a book coming out. You want to talk about that for a minute?
Yes. So I wrote a memoir called Survive in Advance, and it's not a fairy tale. But it is my tale to tell, and it does ultimately have a happy ending, but we alluded to this earlier. I really wanted people to see the life behind someone that they see as a champion. I have 9 global medals, but nobody actually knows what my life was like in the pursuit of those medals. And I wrote this book to tell that story because at the end of the day, all we really want is to be seen by someone as our true selves, to be supported in that journey, and for people to bear witness to us living our lives out loud, right? So that is that is the purpose of the memoir. But at the same time, I want people to close the book and be like, you know what? I can do hard shit too.
Yes.
And so that's the point of the book. And I'm looking forward to sharing it with the world.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait to get it. So it comes out, what, in June of this year?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
June 8th is the release date, and it should be available for pre-order sometime in May.
Okay.
Yeah,
awesome. Exciting. So what do you think that long distance runners can learn from sprinters, jumpers, and yogis?
So from a sprinter, what can a distance person learn from a sprinter? I feel like I've seen every distance runner has a kick right at the end of the race, which mm-hmm. is amazing because you have to go to somewhere deep to find a new level. I think what they can learn from sprinters is how to be as efficient as possible with their form in that moment to be even faster in the kick. Ooh. And so we use the same form at the end in our races as you do at the end of your races. So imagining that you're becoming a sprinter in that moment and trying to mimic that form will actually improve your time.
Oh, so that's
one practical thing that you can learn from sprinters. From yogis, I think distance runners know this better than I think any other athlete, just how to be in your body, aware of your body mm-hmm. at all times. You spend so much time in that body. I think you guys got that down.
Yeah. And, you know, and jumping too, I just had a physical therapist on, and he was talking all about plyometrics and jump work mm-hmm. for runners. And I think endurance runners really kind of skip that, you know, and jumping makes you powerful. And, clearly from, you know, you do it all the time. How often do you do plyometrics?
Oh, probably some version of it daily. And wow. Yeah, you're right. Endurance runners do need that because every time you strike the ground, that's force application. And plyometrics teaches the body how to be efficient with applying that force to propel you forward. Everybody yeah. can benefit from that. Even people who just walk could benefit from that.
Good advice. So what's up next for you? Are you going back to Hayward Field soon?
This weekend, actually, for the USATF Grand Prix. I'm really excited to see the stadium. That way, honestly, I don't have to go into shock at the Olympic trials because I'm seeing it for the first time in a big moment. So I'm happy mm-hmm. to break the ice this weekend.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, best of luck to you on that. Before I let you go, I have a few questions that I ask everyone. So if you could go back and talk to yourself when you first started running, what advice would you give yourself?
No effort is wasted. That even in the hard moments, what you learn and take from that will help you in the great moments. And so embrace all of it.
I love it. And what's the greatest gift that running has given you?
It's been my passport to the world. Yeah.
Awesome. And finally, where can listeners connect with you?
Oh, please continue to follow along for this crazy ride that is my life at Instagram. And my handle there is tiana.bartoletta. That's mm-hmm. the best place. Or you can keep up with updates at tianabee.com. That's B-E-E, like the bumblebee.
Yeah, because you blog there too, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Awesome. Well, I know that you have to go pretty soon, so I will let you go. But I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show and sharing all your knowledge with us. And best of luck in this Olympic year. That is a little bit crazy, but best of luck with everything. And we'll keep on following you.
Thanks so much, Claire. It's been a fun conversation.
Okay, seriously, if you haven't done it yet, go check out Tiana's Instagram page. Just the absolute most stunning pictures of how strong she is and how flexible. I know I've got to get back into yoga, so maybe I should join Tiana's breakfast club. As the Run to the Top grows, I am committed to bringing you the most interesting people in the sport of running, both on the endurance side and on the sprint side. We certainly have a lot more in common than we might think, and I, for one, find that exploring fresh perspectives on running, I think it's incredibly rewarding. I hope you do too. And if so, I'd love to hear from you with a review on Apple Podcasts. Last year, I did this huge push for reviews and it was super successful, but I'd still love to see one from you. We had a recent review from AZLCSD who said, "I can actually listen to every episode and learn something new." That's exactly my goal with the Run to the Top, and I'd love to read your review next week. If you'd like bonus content delivered right to your inbox each Friday, join the Elite Treatment, my newsletter for my favorite listeners at runnersconnect.net/podcast. I'm thinking that it's about time to do a new giveaway soon, and my elites will hear about it first. That's it for me, Claire Bartholik, The Planted Runner. You can follow me at theplantedrunner.com, on Instagram at theplantedrunner, and at Runners Connect. Have a great run today.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.